this is one of the unusual occasions when First Friday and First Saturday are not next to each other. First Saturday was last Saturday, but today's First Friday. And that only happens when Saturday falls on the 1st and Friday falls on the 7th. In any case, it is First Friday, and that gives us an opportunity to honor the Sacred Heart. That is to honor the love of God revealed in the heart of Jesus. That is to honor the mercy of God revealed in the heart of Jesus. So it's an inexhaustible subject to ponder, the mercy, the love of God. Yesterday, in our formation series, we reflected on a talk from Pope Francis, and the main theme of the talk was that each of us, our life is a book, the book of our own life. It's part of his series on discernment. Now, I know some of you weren't there, but you can get the idea right away that our life is a book. Everyone's life is a book. And what Pope Francis pointed out was the importance of reading that book, reading it deeply, not just superficially. So it's not just remembering, I went to Tagaytay last month or something like that, a superficial recall. It's reading the book in order to discover what God is doing and what God has been doing through the whole journey of life. He said that typically people either don't read the book at all, or the only thing they read is the bad parts. They get focused on, or we get focused on, what's wrong with our life or what has gone wrong with our life. What he called toxic elements. So the idea that we're a failure, we're sinners, we'll never do anything right, we're never going to succeed, we can't get out of our sin patterns, and all those sorts of thoughts are part of the book. And they're part of the book. I mean, they're in the book. But the Pope's point was, that's not the whole book. You have to broaden your view and understand the goodness of God at work. And he even used the word excavation. You have to dig up the goodness because it's hidden beneath the surface. Now, those of you who are in the talk, that you know that that's the topic. But it's still fresh in my mind. And in reflecting on these readings, I think it's a good way to ponder the word today. Now, and today we have another passage from the great book of Genesis. Talk about pondering a book of life. Genesis is just an extraordinary book. And here we have a few more excerpts from the journey of Abraham. Unfortunately, they cut out a lot of the good stuff, and we just get a few of the bare bones of the story, mainly the death and burial of his wife Sarah, and then the necessity of finding a wife for his son Isaac. Now, but I say the details are where a lot of the goodness is. So if you're going to excavate, or if you're going to read the book of Abraham's life, you have to go back to Genesis. This reading only gives a few hints about it. The thing is, Abraham, he's near the end of his life by this time. Sarah's already dead. Isaac is already in his 30s. So he can read the book of his life by looking back and seeing how faithful God has always been. It was not always obvious in the moment. God's promise was clear, but how he was going to fulfill the promise wasn't always clear. But looking back, well, actually, Abraham could see it in faith, even in the moment. That's his greatness. He could see it. He could see what was not visible because he had faith. He could see that this land, which was alien territory to him, was actually the land God promised to him and his descendants. He could see it, but in the details of the moment, he's still an alien, and he doesn't even have a place to bury his own wife. So you see the unfolding of the story, or the reading of the book, takes effort and to uncover the goodness of God at work. So one of the reasons why this passage is so important is because this is the first piece of land that Abraham owns in the promised land, the burial site of his wife. That's the beginning. That's like a seed of the possession of the land. He buys a cave to bury his wife, and that's his only possession of land. Other than that, he's a nomad. But you can see, looking back, this was just the start of the taking possession of the promised land, which actually didn't really get fulfilled until 400 years later. Abraham's descendants didn't really take the land until the days of Joshua. Okay, now we'd like to take this image of reading the book, and there's a lot in the Abraham story, but I'd like to focus for now on Matthew, because this passage of the call of Matthew is a great book to read. At the beginning, all we know about Matthew is that he's a tax collector. And if you're not reading deeply, that's the end of the book. That's the whole book. Matthew, tax collector. Close the book, don't read anymore. It's a bad book. That's certainly how people looked at Matthew, right? Tax collector, forget it. It's a hopeless case. It's a sinner. Tax collector means sinner. He's a sinner. Irredeemable sinner. That's the end of the book. Don't read that book. You can see that judgment is in the reading here, where the Pharisees say, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? Like, those are bad books. Don't read those books. But this is probably what Matthew was reading to. It's probably what he saw in the book of his life. Who are you? I'm Matthew. Oh, what do you do for a living? I'm a tax collector. Oh, end of the book. There's no more you need to know about this guy. So probably, because we do this to ourselves, probably Matthew had a perception of himself that was overrun with toxic elements. That's the term of the Pope. Toxic elements. I'm a sinner. There's no hope for me. I can't get any better. I haven't done anything good. Sure, I have money, but I'm pretty much a bad book. That's probably what Matthew thought, because he's from his own culture and everybody thought that about him. So that's the kind of message he would have absorbed. But see, that's a very superficial reading of the book. And the one who reads the book best is Jesus. When Jesus sees Matthew, he doesn't see bad book, I'm not going to read it. He sees the hidden goodness beneath the surface. Here's someone who could become one of my disciples. Here's someone who could be a very fruitful participant in the spreading of the word. Here's an evangelist. Now, we don't know exactly what was in Jesus' mind, but he could perceive in Matthew goodness. What does he say to Matthew? Very first words, follow me. He doesn't say, sinner, tax collector, bad book. He says, follow me. You see what a beautiful revolution takes place there? He bypasses the superficial read that everybody is making, including Matthew himself, and he says, follow me. I want you to be part of my book. I want to include you in my work. Gosh, Matthew gets it. I mean, he doesn't understand it, of course, but he feels it right away. Someone sees something good in me. I don't even see it myself. If this man wants me to follow him, well, I'm going to do it. Whatever that means, I don't know, but this is a new page. I thought the book was closed. He's opened it up and found all kinds of new possibility here. So I love this image that the Pope uses of the book of one's own life and applying it to Matthew. Now, Matthew, once that new chapter is open, and once the new possibility is open, immediately he starts inviting other people, saying, hey, there's more to life than what we thought. There's more to us than what we thought. This man has come for us. He has not come for the righteous. He has come for sinners. He's come for us. See, Jesus looks at sinners with eyes of mercy. That's another one of Pope Francis's famous lines. In fact, that's his own motto, his papal motto. Looking at him with mercy, he called him. Jesus looks at us with mercy, and so he sees goodness, potential at least, but also goodness that is hidden beneath the surface, and he calls us. Now, and this is another point from yesterday's talk. Not only do we read the book of our own life, and not only do we share our life with one another in some level, maybe not the whole book at one time, just a few pages, but we also can read the lives of the saints and see in them the ways of God. And that's why this gospel is so precious to us, because we read Matthew's experience and we learn how God looks at him and how God relates to him. And once we get that lesson, we say, well, that applies to me too. Isn't that beautiful? I mean, we might not consciously think of ourselves as a tax collector, but we do have toxic elements. You know, I'm a sinner, I've sinned before, I keep sinning. I can't get over this bad habit. I can't get along with so and so. I made a mess out of things. And those things are part of the book. But when we look at the story of Matthew, we realize that's not the whole story. There's also the mercy of God. There's also the hidden goodness of God. God is looking at us with mercy. He loves us. He wants us to follow him. He wants us to join him. He wants us to serve him. He wants us to be his representatives in the world. Wow. Wow. So it's a great book. It's a great book. So read the book of your own life. Reread the book of your own life. If you can't see any goodness in it, look deeper, because God is there. Look deeper. Dig a little further down. Things that look bad to us at first don't look bad to God. Well, sin looks bad, of course. It's easy to find sin. But that's not the only thing. Look that even in the moments of sin, even in the problem of sin, the mercy of God is deeper, ready to forgive and call us out of sin to follow him. So to be called to follow is to leave sin behind. Yes. It doesn't ignore the reality of sin, but it opens up a whole new chapter, a whole new adventure of discovery of the goodness of God, the mercy of God in our journey of life.